7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 235 of Color Magic, your Magic Gaming podcast, where we talk about all types of things that affect gamers at and away from gaming tables and computers. I am your host, Power Dragon, and hopefully the weather's not burning up too much yet down in Texas. Brian Cyanek, how's it going, man?
Oh, the champ is here, still crushing it in WWE 2K and some of the things that I occasionally play for fun. I vaguely remember playing video games for fun.
Did they ever figure out that whole like glitch situation in the beginning where that person had like 1,000 matches in like a day or whatever that was?
Oh, I don't even think they address anything like that. They're just like, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because there's no way, like, even with bots, you'd have no way to make that happen. Like, I don't know what that was.
Well, again, unless somebody is just laying down for you, you know, doing the finger poke of doom over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's possible. I mean, gosh damn, that would take a long time, though.
I mean, whatever is being done is taking a long time to do.
Oh,
even
sure.
I think the last time I looked, they got 17,000 matches. I'm like, yeah, it's insane. Even if you assume the minimum, like they're doing finger poke of doom and it's 3 seconds, that's still a ridiculous.
Well, yeah, because you still have to go back into the loading screen. You get paired up, like the game has a load, ring entrances you got to click through or whatever. Like,
well, they've probably got entrances turned off. You can turn in.
That's probably true. Yeah.
So you're really probably only with loading, okay, you're still taking probably what 15, 20 seconds, but that's still a long time.
That's crazy. But yeah, as you can tell, we are hyped about WrestleMania because that was crazy this last weekend. That was. 2 days, though, wore me down, man. This is, I forget. Sometimes it's long.
Well, yeah. Never thought it needed to be 2 days, but they ain't giving the money back. And I guess not enough people are complaining about it. If people keep watching it, they're going to keep doing it. And
but I will say, we have some Magic stuff to cover. There's a few things here. So, you know, we had our own events this week. Before we get into it, don't forget, you can be a supporter of the show over on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/colormagic. And if you want to sponsor some space on the show, we got space, so get a hold of us. You can reach a whole bunch of people, a few thousand folks a month, and we're probably affordable, so just saying. You can also get some other stuff for yourself over at colorofmtg.com/shop, and if you support us over on Patreon, we'll give you a shout-out just like Kevin Myers, so thank you, bro, for supporting the show. But that Magic event, early access. We didn't have it for the last set because, you know, jobs and things were no longer there. So they decided to, I'm assuming, put together a new team. And I think we talked about this a week or two ago where it was being treated a bit differently. You know, we had some parameters that we knew were going to cause some issues. The first being they didn't invite as many creators as they did before. Of honestly, a much smaller number than they did before. There were a lot of people that I'd seen do at least a couple of these in the past that were not invited to this one. Also, the selection of creators, I don't know how they decided because it wasn't even like all the biggest ones or a bunch of new ones. It was just kind of a mix. I don't, maybe it was names out of a hat. I feel like, I don't know. Like they randomized the people who've done it previously. I have no idea what their process was. Now, I will say several of the names I expected to be there were be there. Like Covert Go Blue was participating. Like Ali Eldrazi was in there. You know, Brian Kibler, I ran into him. So, like, some of the big names were in there. So, it wasn't, like, none of them or whatever. But then there was also the issue of the time frame. It was from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time. And for those of you who don't know, normally it runs 8 a.m. a full 24 hours to the next 8 a.m. So, you have all day. And the reason this is important is because a lot of the creators that are participating in the early access are making a bunch of different types of content, right? Some of them are using that time to some part of that day to go, okay, let me talk about a card or two and you can use the graphics on screen, right? Or maybe, hey, you want to build this sample type of deck. Here's some ideas, and right, you go through the process with people. Like people like me, we're trying to get enough gameplay footage that we could put together some fun videos or whatever, right? Because there's going to be a lot of games that are just dead because like one of you didn't get a good draw or somebody didn't know how a card worked, and then the game's kind of funky now because somebody just wasted a spell, or, you know, like, those aren't really good for content. So you're trying to make sure you have enough footage or whatever. But also, you want to be able to engage with your audience, right? And it's a little hard to do that when you're in a time crunch. Because if doing the math, right, you start at 8, you finish at 6, that's 10 total hours you have to work with. But most people aren't going to be on for the full 10 hours because you got stuff to do, right? You got family, you got kids. Hell, I wasn't even able to start until right around 10 o'clock even because I wanted to set up some stuff, had to put some decks in, you know, had to do some prep work because you don't have access to the program more than like just before it goes live effectively. They did let us in a little early this time, but even then you had to be online early. So like if you're West Coast, that would have been, I don't know, 7 in the morning or whatever, 6 in the morning. Or if you're East Coast, not so bad because, you know, you're 3 hours ahead. But then you had the problem of like some creators weren't able to participate because they'd have to get time off work because 8 to 6 is right in that window, right? Some of the viewers weren't able to watch because they don't get off work till 5 or 6. So maybe you got to watch an hour or two, depending on where you were. There were a handful of non-American creators, because one of them I've seen does a lot of Spanish content, I believe. So, but not the amount you normally see. So for sure, there were some issues, right? There's players, I can tell you, I played against Crokies like 3 times, Ali Eldrazi 2 or 3 times. I think Seth from MTG Goldfish, Saffron Olive, I played against him 2 or 3 times. So way more than you normally would on an early access event. Like usually there's maybe 2 or 3 people you run into like early in the day and then late in the day because you're all the ones that streamed all day, you know, so you just dice roll and you hit each other. But this time I probably had like at least 8 or 10 people that I played, not just twice, some of them 3 or 4 times, which was mostly fine because everybody was trying to rotate through decks about every 45 minutes or so because we're all trying to make content and get different footage. So fortunately, you weren't running into the same decks all the time with the same people, but it made it for a little bit of a weird experience. The other side of that, game-wise, front of house issues were actually pretty good. Game played well. All the cards were nuts. Saw lots of cool decks. Players, viewers seemed excited about stuff. We got to see some big things go off. I didn't see any bugs, really, that had to be worked on this week. Most of the things worked. There were some cool, weird and cool visual elements that they upgraded, which were kind of sweet. So, yeah. Overall, I will call it, like, if I had to give it a success scale, 10 being the best possible it could ever be, 1 being trash fire, it's probably, like, 6.5. Just because, like, just not having the extra people in there. It did make the queues a little bit longer, too. Whereas, like, normally you'd be like, oh, I'm back in a game in, like, 15 seconds. There were several times I waited, like, a minute, you know, or minute and a half. Because there was, like, you got to wait on players, right? There just weren't any. I don't know what it was like for drafts, but I imagine drafts were probably rough. Because if everybody's tied up, you know, already drafted and you got to get on, you're probably waiting in a queue because you got to get 7 more people. So, like, I don't even know what that was like. So, yeah, a little bit of a weird time. But that does bring me to my soapbox issue, because it actually is related today. And this one, I think you know well, Brian, but damn, fans are always just salty about stuff, man. We got it. We can't even, like, it's like people look for reasons to be mad. Like, we should be trying to be happy and enjoying our hobbies and our fandoms first and complain second. And don't get me wrong, when they mess up, call them out on it, right? If there's something weird story-wise or products poorly made, yeah, feel free to complain about it. But at least have a legit complaint. Today I bring this up because they added a lot of new visual elements that people are going to see on Tuesday when the new set goes live on Arena. One of them that has gotten people complaining so bad is that if you have a creature with reach, during your opponent's turn, there's now a, for lack of a better explanation, a purplish glowy bow, as in a bow and arrow, that appears above your card or on the card. So you already had like the reach symbol, which is the bow on the card, but now it's an actual thing on the card. And people are so mad about that. Like, I joked about it because I used to say, like, big green creatures on the ground have secret reach because they're not flying. People forget that they can block flyers. So occasionally people just attack into it. And you're like, ooh, got him with secret reach, right? But that, I'm only reason I'm bothered is because I lost a funny bit on my channel. You know, like, I ain't even, like, whatever. It makes the game more accessible. You get fewer non-games from people just making a mistake. Sometimes people are clicking too fast. Hell, I imagine on a, I don't even think about it, but somebody mentioned on mobile, it might be the most misplayed abilities, probably because like icons are small and stuff on mobile or whatever. So like, that's fair. But people are literally mad about this. Like, well, I don't know. If they're going to do that, they need to be consistent and do it for every ability then. I don't know why they're doing it for this one. Well, I don't know. Maybe they're giving it a test run to see if this matters or not. Right? If this changes enough things. Like, they have data. They get complaints. They get letters. They know, right? They can see the footage. They can see the numbers. Other people are literally saying, like, oh, well, they're just holding people's hands and whatever, and they're never going to learn how to play Magic well or whatever. Like, sad story I got to tell you. I know people that have been playing for damn near 2 decades that pretty much ask me a question every set about how cards work. And that's real. So it ain't even like just because they play paper Magic all the time, they're just magically going to be better at the game. Also, now I'm thinking about it, a lot of people had these same complaints about Magic Online once upon a time, too. Because it used to take you through all the phases and you couldn't forget to pay for something because it always stopped during your upkeep or whatever. You'd be like, oh, well, that would never happen in a real tournament. And if people forgot, they just lose their card. And I was like, okay, cool. But if in both of these versions, if you're complaining because you're going to win fewer games because your opponent missed a word on a card and you didn't get an easy free win, the problem is you. Like, get good. Like, you're just mad because you're not getting the free wins now. Like, just beat them. Like, this isn't an opponent problem. And hell, let's be honest, one of the things about Arena is people are probably going to be coming from other online games. So if we make the game more accessible and easier to understand, especially right now where there's all these new cards that do like 10 new things, like if there's a way to make sure that they're not missing keywords on cards or whatever, that's a good thing. And they're probably going to enjoy the game more. Like, yes, you're probably going to get like, I don't know, 2 less free wins a week because your opponents now know your stuff has reach or whatever. Oh, well, like, I mean, literally too bad. So sad. I don't know. I want to say some other things, but we have a fairly PG show, so I'm going to keep it clean. But yeah, like I feel like we see, and Brian, I don't know. Like, I feel like we see this about everything. It doesn't matter if it's Magic, Star Wars, wrestling. Like, something could be good. Everybody's celebrating a thing, and there's always the group of people that goes, yeah, but, you know, and it's just like, dude, just let people have fun for like 5 minutes.
Well, some of it is the amount of goodwill you've earned. And to be honest, Wizards is kind of low in that right now. Like, I Bethesda does a thing. I hear, like, you very rarely hear it. But Fallout, for example, has a million glitches. But people have learned how to weaponize the glitches and make that a part of their character. That they just kind of, they love Fallout so much, they kind of go in there and roll with the glitches. Whereas, you know, As we talked about, Wizards got off to kind of a rough start this year. So EA, same thing happens. EA steps on its own foot. It's like, you know, a Tom with a rake. And Tom, they do that so many times to where, everything is just, your goodwill bank gets real low. And then, everything.
I'm okay. If you do something bad, we'll call you on it. We've done it right in front, right here in people's ears and in their face. Like, we've done it more than once. I got no problem with that. But when we've complimented something that's actually good, and then people still want to complain about it, and I'm like, no, but this is still a net positive. Like, I don't even know what you're complaining about. Like, the upside of this way outweighs the downside.
When you've made yourself the bad guy, it becomes harder to get credit.
It's the same thing, you know, to bring it back to wrestling from this weekend. Everybody's going, oh, this is great. They made the most money. They sold the most merchandise. Hell, I heard Cody Rhodes sold $1 million worth of merchandise just on WrestleMania weekend.
Right.
Like, and people are still like, well, I don't know if he's the guy they need to go with. I'm like, bruh, he made $1 million in 2 days. like, what's wrong with you? Like, really, like, get yourself together, man.
Well, again, they've got a huge bank of negative pub from their leader being a, you know,
not creeper. Cody, not Triple H, not whatever.
No, like, no, but still, Vince McMahon, they're trying to eliminate Vince McMahon, but it's gonna be a generation before anybody forgets that Vince McMahon was a thing. So you just kind of
even then, like,
ride that out.
Again, it's just like when something's good, just let it be good. And yeah, we have to identify when the problem is us. Because there are things that I look at and I don't like, but I still am able to go, you know what? But I get how this is going to be good, right? It's not necessary for me. It doesn't necessarily fit my interests, but it's probably going to be a good overall thing. We got to still be self-critical in some of our complaints. Because otherwise, you literally just sound like a whiny ass. Like, let's be real. You just do. And it's just like, and there's things that's happened for me, even as a creator, that don't benefit me. But I get that it's better for the player. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. Right? Not everything's going to be for me. But if it's a net positive overall, then that's good for all of us. I mean, hell, we talked about it off camera. Like, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. Jerry Jones makes some decisions that I don't like. But I also know at this point, complaining about him ain't going to do a damn thing because Jerry Jones is going to been Jerry Jones for 80 years and going to keep being. So
it's not even, I mean, I'm not even enjoying making fun of Cowboy fans anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like kicking a puppy. They can't defend themselves anymore.
There's a point where when I hear people complain, I'm like, you know what? At this point, just turn on and enjoy the game. If the game's good, that's all I care about. I'm not even worrying about all these other decisions I can't control.
You're not worried about winning, basically. You're not worried about the team being getting good.
Oh, no. They're going to win. You're just going to lose in the playoffs. Like, you're going to be 12-5, you know, 13-3, whatever. Like, you're going to win
As a Saints fan, I'd be perfectly happy with that. I have no higher.
Exactly.
The Cowboys, no, you.
But you just know. You know what the upside is. So there ain't no point complaining about it at this point. Just enjoy it or you don't. You're a fan along for the ride or you're not, right? That's just the way it is. And you got it worse off than I do. Like you said, being a Saints fan, right? You at least had your, like, couple of years of great Drew Brees runs.
Oh, yeah, we got our Super Bowl. I can die
but
happy.
But since
now.
Then, and before that, it's rough. Like, y'all were some people coming to games with paper bags on your heads, which is wild.
And I wasn't even alive when that was happening. So that was getting off of my nose. I didn't even know football was. I went at the tail of that. I didn't even know that was a thing. I was probably 4 or 5 when that was happening.
But, you know, think about that. If people can enjoy football so much that they're willing to show up, know their team's going to be trash, wearing paper bags, and you're going to be mad that they added an icon to a card. One of y'all enjoys their thing way more than the other thing. Like, just saying. But all right, I'm going to get off it. I'm going to let you go.
That's right. As we say at Murder Mystery, I'm still in this show. Soapbox. I was about to get my things confused here, but. The Xbox 360 marketplace is going to go away here soon. And a lot of you probably like, who, that's 2 systems ago. Why does anybody care? But I mean, if you still play any of those games, if you're interested in playing any of those games, or those we've talked about, digital content and just all the problems. And this is one of the problems where, hey, somebody just flips a switch one day and the content essentially no longer exists. Many of these games are only digital. So when the Xbox 360 marketplace goes away, and I believe it's, let me click on this record. Yeah, July 29th is when the Xbox 360 marketplace goes away. If you've already bought it, you'll still be able to download it. But yeah, if you won't be able to buy any. The Video Games Chronicle has a list of. There's at this point over 200 games that basically are digital only and are going to go away. And they, I think it's being updated almost hourly if somebody asks, hey, what about this game? Oh, yeah. This is the thing nobody thought about during the 360 era because, you know, games just being digital was really kind of just becoming a huge thing. I was still, especially when the Xbox 360 first launched, I was still buying most of my games on disc. And then, you know, as now we're in an era where they make discless consoles. Rumors are that the next PlayStation and Xbox probably won't even have a disc drive, possibly. So that's where we are. Problem being... Also, where we are, somebody can push a button and you don't get to play any of those. And especially if you like, you know, getting trophies, achievements. There are so many of these games that have online-only achievements, online-only trophies. So if you care about getting 100% completion, you just you're not going to be able to on some of these unless you, again, already bought them. Or that's why people are, we're giving the shout out July 29th, anything you want, or excuse me. Yeah, 29th, July 29th, anything you want to try to play. Or if you got the disc, obviously, you're good. If you already bought it, you're good. But if there's anything maybe in the 360 era that you were, have been meaning to pick up and hadn't, yeah, get that done soon.
I wonder if there's a room in the market, and maybe it exists, I don't know, for somebody to make something that you could port your games from your, well, any system, but in this case, like a 360 hard drive to a regular hard drive to play on your PC and just use the Xbox controller. Because I already use Xbox controller to play some stuff on my PC, so maybe?
They do. It's called piracy.
I'm just saying, once it's gone, though, but you already own it, but you may be getting rid of your 360 and you still want to play those things that you paid for. Is it really piracy, though?
You paid for it. If you didn't, if you paid for it, you can still download it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you download onto your Xbox, but can you get it from your Xbox to another device? Like, I don't.
That's going to depend on, you know, I guess when the next Xbox has backward compatibility. And so far, Xbox has been doing backward compatibility.
That's cool.
I think they're both doing it because they realize that, hey, you know, there are years, you know, where all your games get delayed. There are years where just nothing is hitting. So sometimes, you know, the remasters and the redos are kind of, we just looked, was it Resident Evil? The remake was nominated for Game of the Year in countless places because they looked around and decided out of the thousands of games that came out that year, a remake of Resident Evil was the best one, or one of the best ones. And a lot of people, you know, there are a lot of complaints about that, but that's what majority of critics agreed on in most cases. So.
I feel like this is a tough thing too, because it applies to a lot of things, right? Where we've been able to get more entertainment cheaper, I guess we want to say that, because, you know, you can buy Spotify or YouTube Music or whatever, and you can even get for whatever, $12 a month, just get infinite music, right? But you really don't own it, right? You don't have anything physical. You can't transfer it to another device. It's literally, or another account. It's literally on just that. You can't even download, like, if I have something on YouTube Premium, I can't even download it to my PC to listen to it, you know, not being offline or whatever, right? Like, that's just not a thing. Now, I can do it on my phone, but it's technically on the account on my phone. So I still can't do, you know. But same thing, it's been a thing with like Apple Music and whatever for a long time, even coming back from like trying to transfer stuff from one iPod to another back in the day was brutal already. So we've kind of been pushing toward this era for a long time where everything's digital. And just like you said, unfortunately, any company decision, somebody getting bought out, somebody taking stuff offline or whatever, like you just lose access to some of your favorite things.
We talked about
whether you paid for them or not.
A couple of months ago, you know, a bunch of people had bought Warner Brothers shows on Sony PlayStation, and Warner Brothers just pulled the rights. So you might have, you know, 10 seasons of Deadliest Catch or whatever your favorite, you know, Warner reality show is. Like, yeah, I paid for this. Warner says, too bad, so sad. We sold to somebody else. You don't own it anymore.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, good call out, though, making people aware. But all right, let's get into some other things, because I think we both learned something kind of interesting this week, and I think both might be a little bit surprising and interesting to people. So what do you got?
Yeah, Sea of Thieves, we've talked about it on here a lot, the pirate-themed game on Xbox, and actually it's going to be on PlayStation soon too, even though it's made by Microsoft, because we're in that era. But yeah, they have a transgender character, and this is, I don't know if it's the first time it's happened. This is the first time I've seen it, where they actually, their transition takes place during the game's timeline. I've seen a lot of games where, okay, you know, the new character is introduced. Like, for example, the Harry Potter game did this because they knew people were going to come out for J.K. Rowling. So they introduced a trans character, hoping to try to deflect that. It did not work. But in this case, the character started the game male, and now you go back to, I believe the character is a trader in-game, so you go and, I guess, buy and sell equipment, and a lot of people wonder, like, wait, where's Marley, I believe the character's name is, and then they found out that Marley now identifies as a woman, so.
Interesting.
As far as I know, that's the first, I know I play a lot of games the first time I've seen somebody do their transition during the game's actual timeline. Usually we're told kind of almost off camera is the, like, this character is here, this character is transgender, and then maybe, I know Apex has a transgender character, and they kind of mention it in the little bit of in-game dialogue you get while Apex characters are shooting at people. They mention the transition and things along those lines, but as far as I know, this is the first time we've seen a character transition during the game's time on camera, so to speak.
That's pretty cool. You know, I think it's one of those things too that, like a lot of things, it gives people a chance to be seen, you know, for lack of a better explanation there. But also, like, if it's something you still have an issue with, because those people still exist, like, it doesn't change the gameplay, you know? So, like, it's a cool thing that they're at least integrating that I'm down for, you know? Like, I'm obviously not part of that community, but it's cool that that exists. I mean, I think it's kind of neat.
And that game is a huge success story because it came out, it was, to, as the kids like to say, mid. They really kept working on it, kept updating it, and now it's considered to be one of the best games. So good, in fact, that Sony has asked to have it ported over to PlayStation. Microsoft said, hey, you know what? We like money. Let's go ahead and do that.
Did you know what I think helped that game, believe it or not, really was the pandemic? I think it gave it legs longer. Like, had we been living normal lives and not had extra time for people to stream those games and whatever, probably wouldn't have got as many chances as it got. But because of the pandemic, I think when people are like, well, let me try this out, and this is kind of cool, or my favorite streamer is still playing it or whatever. And then it kind of like slowly caught on and like, oh, they added this thing. And like, oh, there's Jack Sparrow's in the game. And oh, there's this thing. And it's just like, and now people almost approach it as though it's a new game, not realizing this thing's been out for like 4 or 5 years, like doing its thing. So like, it's kind of cool. Like, good for them, man. That's a little bit of a comeback story, which is kind of sweet.
Right.
All right. I have a crazy one. Then this is one of those ones. Like, first off, some of you may not know, but there is a Monopoly Go game out there that you can play on mobile that is a interactive multi-person Monopoly online game. If somebody would have asked me, because this came out 2 years ago, and I said, how much do you think this game would have made in that amount of time? I would have probably said like 500 to 700 million, because it's Monopoly. Monopoly, everything still sells. Like,
random. It's a collector's item. People buy Monopoly games, don't even open them. They just want Monopoly for that particular property. A lot of times.
Oh, dude. I'll tell you, when I was at Wizards, one of the things I was stunned by is I found, or I say found, I had somebody send me like a catalog effectively of all the different things that they make for different brands for merchandise. The amount of Monopoly stuff that existed blew me away. Like, they make Monopoly earrings and like charm bracelets, and and people buy all this stuff. Like, it's crazy. A bunch of stuff that I didn't even know was around.
It
seems like
they drop at least one new Monopoly version monthly. It could be more than that. I know it feels like it's kind of going to, you know, anywhere in local stores, the mall or what have you. There's just a brand new the properties I forgot about. There's a brand new Monopoly.
I was just waiting to see Monopoly Breaking Bad, because like, they've done everything else. I was like,
I can't believe they haven't considered.
Seen one yet, but it might exist.
I mean, after all, drug dealing is about, you know, claiming territory,
going through the neighborhoods. But yeah,
people would say, you know, that you're promoting crime, but Amy, they got Star Wars and Darth Vader literally kills kids. So
yeah, he literally does. But yeah, this game, dude, and this blew me away, this number. They have done $2 billion in sales.
I wouldn't have guessed $2 billion.
That's so big. Like, I think we talked about it before that Candy Crush has done, I think it was like $5 billion at the time, a year. So maybe they're up to like $6 billion by now. But like, think about how long Candy Crush has been around.
Right.
Right.
Monopoly Go is what? How is it?
A little over two years, I believe. I need to double check, but I think it's 2 years. Yeah, let's see. When did Monopoly Go release? Because I'm pretty sure it was. Oh, no. It's only been 1 year. April 11th. I thought it was 2022.
$2 billion in 1 year.
Okay. Yeah. So even crazier, right? That it's 1 year ago and they did $2 billion. Like, think about that. They made as much in sales. That was almost double what Wizards of the Coast as a company did. Like, that's crazy on Monopoly Go.
Well, I mean, we've known for it's one of their iconic brands. They just had to, you know, I guess figure out how to convert. And they've been working on that for a while. There was like some kind of Monopoly card game. I've got three or four different digital Monopoly products. So speaking of digital marketplace stuff, there's probably about four or five different versions of Monopoly on the PlayStation.
Oh, and I've seen Monopoly. They came with like the credit card swipe readers, and they've been doing all kinds of stuff with it. But like, so.
And I always try at least whatever they put on the video game system. I tried at least one time, see if I kind of.
Oh yeah, and I want to tell people like, for as much as you might look at Monopoly and just go like, ah, that game's old, whatever, they do honestly try to keep innovating with Monopoly, which is wild to say that, but it makes sense that it's one of their flagship brands. Now, the crazy thing is, the reason this even got across my radar is there are people in the advertising community that were following this game. And supposedly, the company that is working with Hasbro to produce this, between them, they have spent $500 million on promotion. Now, so far, I could not find a story detailing what that promotion was, so I don't know if they're giving a value to some amount of promotion they got, or if those are actual dollars they spent, or whatever. But even then, let's say between the promotion they spent and paying all the people and whatever else, that's $1 billion. Like, they still profited $1 billion in a year on Monopoly Go. That's wild. And they probably didn't spend $500 million between all the people to get done whatever.
Right.
So you probably made like 1.2, 1.3, something like that. But that's crazy. You know, when people think about what people will spend, I don't think people understand. Right? Like, I remember when I first moved up to Washington, I talked to somebody who worked for one of the companies that makes Candy Crush, but this was for one of their like slot machine type games. And she was explaining to me that they have some whales that will spend a couple of thousand a month on just winning like a gift card and on Amazon or whatever, playing these like slot machines on their phone or whatever, which is crazy, right? But when they want to come back to Magic, so I don't believe Wizards is charging $200 for this thing. There are people that are going to pay $200 for the thing. Like, it sounds crazy to you and me, but people are going to do it. It's been proven time and again.
I would argue if you are spending $2,000 to win an Amazon gift card, then yeah, it is a little like it's your money. You're in it. And I'm hoping that the person that's doing that can't afford that, although you mentioned we've all seen cases where we know the person that's doing that can't afford it. But
yeah, and don't get me wrong. Some people are retirees just chilling, and they're like, whatever, I enjoy this thing, I don't care. And they're just going to keep flipping and play their game, right? Whatever.
Well, my aunt was asking me one day, you know, like, is there any, like, you know, you're into video games, are there tips? Or then I told her, like, Candy Crush? No, you pretty much just got to open your wallet, unfortunately. There's really not, I think even the whoever created Candy Crush has admitted there's not really... I mean, sure, there's combos you can do, but best combo is just that credit card. You know?
Yeah, you're just time-locked, right? You play your games, right. You come back in an hour and a half or whatever after the ticker's down, and you play another couple games, and you come back tomorrow or whatever. You know, just like every game where you got to – every sim where you got to build something or whatever, you set it to build, you wait 45 minutes, and you come back, right?
Or you pull out your – because after we had the conversation, I was thinking it. Tish turns to me and says, like, she finna go buy some candy. She is gonna go buy some digital candy. She is hooked. That was the longest conversation me and my auntie have ever had about video games.
But dude,
and she's been knowing what I do for like my entire life. But
I've watched people do it where they're playing one of those games where you're building a thing. And it's like, oh, well, if I give them $1, I can just play for the next hour. Cool. You hit the button, they take 99 cents. You're playing for the next hour, and like, oh, you hit another thing, and it's like, is it worth another $1? Or do you want to wait the hour and a half for this, like, whatever, skyscraper or whatever to be built, you know, right? I guess I'll be back after I drop the kids off or whatever, you know, come back, play some more. But that's how they make their money, right? They're either going to, you're going to get money or you're going to give them time, one or the other.
Yep.
But this applies to everything. That's the main reason I bring it up, right? When we're talking about any of our games, Magic, whatever, like, you're going to have to give them either time or money. The games that you don't give time or money to tend to be the ones that fail the fastest.
Especially if I'm trying to, you know, do content or write a review for something, I've learned how to multitask and like, let's say Overwatch at my rank, it may take me 7 or 8 minutes to find a match. I can play Marvel Snap while I'm waiting for an Overwatch match and so on. There's so many games that applies.
But think about Runeterra, right? There was a point a couple of years ago where everybody was saying, oh, well, Arena should follow this model and Runeterra gives me this and I can build all these decks after like a month and I can do whatever. And I kept asking people, okay, cool, but what's their business model? Because at some point, you have to either get time or you got to get money. Because time at least assumes that there will be people spending time playing it. People will be talking about it. You can always find players when you log on, whatever. Or you're just going to give them money and they're happy just having the money so you can just have everything, right? Runeterra supposedly wasn't asking for either. So it's just like, what are people like you? Okay, I got everything. I guess I'll just wait till the next set comes out. I don't have to play between now and then. There's nothing to collect. And then Runeterra shuttered after what? 2 years? Year and a half, whatever that was?
It's just they're not, I don't know what, I think there's been layoff. I mean, they're still making it, I think. They're not going to try to compete with Arena. They knew that was, you know, that was always kind of a long shot. And they said, no, we're not even going to try to really be a huge hit in the market anymore.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's just like, there's no discussion around it. No, nothing really anymore. And it's not like it's a terrible game. It's actually decent.
It's an excellent game.
Yeah. But it's just, we've seen the structure proven time again, right? Like time and time again. Like there's a reason everybody follows this model because it works. And we haven't seen one super successful that doesn't follow that model yet. And as we've seen, it apparently crushes for Monopoly Go. Right. So even for Monopoly, it works.
Well, so Marvel Snap doesn't let you spend money, right?
What's that?
Marvel Snap doesn't actually take your money, right? You have to play through the game.
They do have offerings that you could get, like, sometimes they have, like, cards you could just buy outright. There's different variants. You can get extra, like, gems or gold or whatever they call it in their game to buy stuff. So, like, they have ways to get money. It's just not, like, if you don't, you have to try to get your cards opened on the ladder thing or whatever they have, and you get the little crates and... You know, so even they have a built-in system to do it.
So let's say you want to run XYZ deck, you still are going to have to grind that ladder, but you might be able to buy one of the cards. You won't be able to buy 12 of the cards.
Yep. Or you have to wait till it randomly comes through your little thing because they have the random ones you could buy like every other day or something.
Because that's going to keep you checking back.
So you're at least going to get on and check it. And that's where the time comes from, right? Like, and you're like, well, I'm on. I guess I'll play a couple of games since I'm already sitting here, right? It's just proven time and time again. Like I said, like we can complain about it, but this system works. And this is just Monopoly is another way to prove it. But anyway, let's get to a couple of topics. All right. So this one's a fun one. Interesting one. Because remember how a couple months ago they said, hey, we're going to start doing some secret layers where the quantities are already predetermined. Probably just for process issues or whatever. They did not overprinting, whatever. Well, we had our first big super drop where that was the case. So we have the Equinox super drop, they're calling it, for 2024.
God, speaking of wrestling, that sounds like a trademark finisher. Oh my God, the Equinox super drop!
Exactly.
There's no way he's getting up.
Right? Yeah. But, and it's based around Fallout. So you already knew it was going to be popular, especially since we just had the Fallout set that everybody liked. The Fallout TV show or whatever just launched. Right. So people are talking about that and that's all over nerd news. And as it turns out, of the, I believe, 10 offerings they had, all of them are already sold out except for 3. And those are already all labeled as limited stock. And some people are upset because they were only live for a couple hours before they were gone.
That's wild.
I mean, I sort of knew they were going to be up. And by the time I checked it, a bunch were already gone. Now, admittedly, there's nothing I feel personally too bad about. Some would have been like nice to haves. But if you were a fan and really wanted some of these, that's a rough feel bad, man. Now, it does mean that some of these are going to be worth more later because there's some limited quantity that we know a lot of people do want because we've seen them complaining about it online.
And I got to take another victory lap. We need like a Brian was right sound or something. Because I remember you were sure Fallout was going to move, and good Lord, you ain't going to be able to find it.
I didn't say it was going to move, just not as popular as some of the other things. But that
and
said...
So, and I guess it's the most popular one so far, apparently? Almost broke the system?
Well, it is sold out on pre-order, pre-sold quantities. So we don't know what that number is yet. I'm sure we'll find out later. But as of now, we don't know if that number's 1,000 each or 10,000 each. Or hell, it could be 100,000 each. I don't know. If it was, that would definitely be the biggest thing by far. But yeah, we don't have any idea. That's the other thing that makes us tough. Here. That's the other thing that makes us tough, though, is because everything so far with Fallout seems to have been extra limited. We also saw that with the collector's boosters. That was a big thing because even stores were like, hey, we'd like to do, when are you going to be able to reorder some of these or how big is it going to be? And they weren't even able, like, usually you can't do a reasonable reorder unless they're already at your distributor. But there were none extra to be had. Like, you couldn't even, like, the normal quantities they wanted, they couldn't even get. So it's just like, oh, I don't know if this is part of the license with the company or I don't know. Or it's just like, hey, this is how we're going to do stuff in 2024. Get ready. You know what I mean? Like, that might be part of it, too. Just we'll see what happens with the summer universes beyond thing, whatever that's supposed to be. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know, man. We knew there was going to be some backlash these first couple of times.
Yeah. My suggestion is still some kind of limit on how many people could buy. Like, maybe if you even have, like, NBA Top Shot does this, where, like, okay, everybody, you give everybody a chance to buy it first off, and you can only buy one. Then, okay, if there's any left over, then you can come back into the queue and buy whatever's left over. So we may need to start doing something that way.
Yeah, limit it to 1 to 3 or something, because I know some people probably bought, like, 5 or whatever, like, but the tough thing for me is if we're going to say on the one hand, we're saying from Hasbro, right? Not even Wizards. Like, we need to make more money, but so we're having to lay people off and this, that, and the other. But then we're pushing this other decision that obviously is limiting sales, right? Like, there's some number of, I'm assuming at least tens of thousands, if not more, that they're just not collecting by not having more cards available. Now, I don't know what the perfect system is. Maybe each time we up the number a little bit till we find out what the sweet spot is, where there's only a couple left or it sells out right before the end of the month or whatever. Maybe that's the goal.
Also, FOMO is part of the sales pitch. Like, sure, oh my God, I got to go get it right now because or else I won't get it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, each time you can go, okay, well, let's make the next number 15% more than the last number or whatever. Okay.
Or maybe they don't because Apple doesn't do that. They will, however many they make in their first run is however many they made because they know people will take a day off work to go get an iPhone. So sure. Maybe you want Secret Lair to be the same way. We're like, you already know you gonna have to take a day off work and keep hitting that button to even stand
I would argue that works if you're willing to keep increasing the price from there in. Because otherwise, because Apple just says we're gonna make the rare $2,000 phone, and people are gonna be in line to buy the $2,000 phone, right?
Like, I feel like we know Wizards is perfectly willing to increase the price.
Oh, I understand
that ain't a problem.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the other side of it, right? If they don't want to leave money on the table, but you want to have the FOMO so it sells out, then instead of increasing the quantity, you say, "All right, well, let's bump this up $15 and see if people still buy it." All right, they bought that. Let's up it $5 and see if people buy it. Oh, they bought that. Let's up it $10 this time until, oh, okay, now people are just starting to stretch their pocketbooks a little too much. Okay, let's keep it here for a while and see what we can sell.
And what's right? Unfortunate with all the things we talked about, since scalpers are part of the economy, they'll mm-hmm. pay any price because they know they'll make any price back. Because, again, especially if they're allowed to buy 12 of them.
Yeah.
You know, they just... You can create your own marketplace because their whole job is sitting online all day and buying up all the things and then scalping them.
Yep, that becomes part of the concern. So I don't know. Again, at this point, I'm not privy to any of these conversations. I don't know how they're going to deal with it. I don't know what their goals or targets are. But there's got to be a middle ground, right? You do want people to buy it. And you want it to sell out fairly quickly. But there also has to be a world where, like, you don't want too many feel bads, and you also don't want to leave too much money on the table, because then it's just kind of, especially with these crossover promotions, right? The goal is to bring in all the fans of these other products and get them to buy Magic related things. It almost makes more sense if it's just like a Magic thing with some different art or something cool, but it feels almost worse to do it when the purpose is to do a crossover, invite in all these people and get the sales momentum of being tied to these other products. But I don't know. This is kind of the first one. We'll see what happens with the next one when it pops up, because we'll probably have it happen again during the summer.
And if you want to ask Brian, well, which one?
Yeah, might as well. Shoot. Why not? But yeah, also want to remind everybody, the New Perspectives grants, that if you don't know what these are, this is a thing they started doing, I think back with the first Vegas they did, actually. I think it was the event after that first Vegas. But basically, if you identify as part of any of the underrepresented minority communities, you go apply for this. I believe they pick 4 winners. It might be 5. And they give you the large VIP package. So you get the Black Lotus VIP, the most expensive one they have. And they give you $2,000 for expenses. So you can go to MagicCon. This one's MagicCon Vegas it's up for. I believe the applications are up till April 27. So you only got a couple of weeks. You need to get your stuff in. For sure, you can just search New Perspectives Grant, MagicCon Vegas. It'll come up. And then just go apply for it. It's an all upside thing, right? Worst thing, you don't get one, whatever. If you do, you're getting a free vacation and a sweet package of stuff, right? You might as well go for it. Doesn't hurt anything. And I have met some of the people at these events who have gotten them, and it's been really cool. And one of them particularly, I remember, they work at like a community center, you know, and they play Magic with the kids and this, that, and the other. So you don't even have to be a creator. You don't have to have a certain job. It's like, just have a connection to Magic and I guess tell them about it in the application or whatever and just see what happens. I have no clue what they base it on, who they pick, but they are actually giving the awards away and people are having a good time from it. So you should go apply. And then this one's an interesting one because we make jokes about colonizers. Well, apparently Laura Croft has recognized that she's a bit of a colonizer. And by a bit, kind of a lot of bit, because it's in the title.
She's a literal Tomb Raider, yeah.
So they're working on a new game with Laura Croft and friends, I will say, because the artwork actually has a pretty diverse cast of characters with her.
Yeah, it's a tabletop RPG, and I believe it says it's for 3 to 6 players. So
yeah, and it's called Shadows of Truth. But the backstory they give here is basically the growth of Laura Croft, that over the years, she literally was raiding tombs of these ancient civilizations and kind of treating everything like a finder's keeper sort of thing.
Yeah. Because then, again, the character she's based on is Indiana Jones. And yeah,
that's what he does. The way. But saying, like, as it's gone on and she started to kind of recognize different cultures and, you know, because she's done this for a while now, that things start feeling a little weird. And it's like, I probably shouldn't be taking all these people's stuff. Like, why don't we try to right some of the wrongs and help solve some of these mysteries or find things or return stuff that people can't find or whatever. And then now kind of building this game around that, which is kind of cool. Like, it's weird to go like, oh man, Lara Croft and Tomb Raider came out, I think when I was either a junior in high school or something. Yeah. 'Cause it's on the original PlayStation.
Right. Like, it's been a minute.
Yeah, and then seeing like this 25 plus year journey of like, oh, the character like learns things and gone through stuff and growth and met these other people, and like now we can make new products based around the life of this character that have like a real world importance.
This is what you want from your character. You don't want the character to be the same, and you know, on story number, I've lost count of how many different games, adventures, and things Lara Croft has had. Let's just say probably 20th. I'm probably not exaggerating to say this might be her 20th, especially. I didn't even know she had a tabletop RPG. So if you count all the other various products, yeah, I'm sure she's easily been in 20 different things.
Now, here's the funny thing. I sent you the Run of Show earlier today. Like 2 hours after I sent that to you, I saw a story that is totally relevant to the situation.
Okay.
As it turns out, the British Museum and I believe it's called the Victoria and Albert Museum in England, realized that between them, they have 32 artifacts that belong to the nation of Ghana. And they were like, you know what? We're willing to send these back to Ghana. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But then I read the rest of the sentence and it said, on loan for 3 years.
F y'all.
But this is just a real life correlation of like, this is history. Like, literally took stuff from people that they're saying is dated to 150 years ago that came from Ghana.
When you think, I forget which comedian I saw say this, but you think about just the arrogance of a museum. Like, hey, you see all this stuff over there? we stole it, and we're going to charge you $20 to come in here and look at it.
Here's what's crazier, right? And to put this in perspective, people go, oh, it's not that big a deal. It's history. Like, the best analogy I can think of is, like, let's say somebody came to your house and they stole an heirloom, right? Your great-great-granddad's pocket watch or whatever, right, that you were so proud of. And then they take it home and they put it in a nice frame and they stick it on their wall, right? And you're coming over for a barbecue, watch the ball game. And you're like, yo, bruh, is that my granddad's pocket watch? And they're like, oh, yeah, it looks good, right? And it's like, I would really like to have that back. And like, you know, you're right. How about I give this to you and you can hang on to it for like 3 years.
Right.
But then I'm going to want it back so I can show it to other people of the thing I took from your $20. House. Right. Like, isn't that crazy? Like, that's such a weird thing to be like, we're acknowledging that this is your history, that this is your culture, that this tells a story of things of your development.
We thought
that but we Great should Britain, have it and not yeah. you, right? Like,
we thought Great Britain had had some character growth, and then
that's, you know, that's crazy though. Like, because it's like the people of that nation, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what the country is, like, should be able to have their own places where their people can go see the thing.
What, like, a concept.
They shouldn't have to go to England to see Ghanaian? I don't know how you say that. Like, the history of Ghana, right? In another country, when they know that that's yours, right? That's just weird. But this is exactly what the new Tomb Raider game is about, right? Like, this is trying to solve these right these wrongs that she's been a part of all these years. So, kind of crazy that coincidentally we were going to talk about it today, and there was just like a real life story that went live of them trying to send artifacts back, which is just crazy.
And again, great to see, you know, somebody, I think the trope is, you know, a nice job of breaking it hero or whatever, to see, you know, that's a good character where the hero doesn't always win, or even if they win, they realize, boy, I really screwed up. Because, yeah, Laura Croft made her whole reputation, as did Indiana Jones before her, and one of my other favorite characters, Scrooge McDuck. All the same things apply. Scrooge McDuck is a Tomb Raider.
That's true. He kind of is.
and I don't know if that's been acknowledged by any Disney product. So we'll see in the future if Scrooge has his come to Jesus meeting on that.
Well, all right, dude. Let's wrap things up. Because I had a fun post I put up the other day. And I asked people, like, we've done Secret Lair, everything else, and coming off WrestleMania, how would you feel if we did Secret Lair WWE? Surprisingly, people were way more receptive than I thought they would be. Because I thought, this will be a funny post and people will tell me I'm crazy or whatever.
Yeah.
But a bunch of people are just like, oh, could I get, like, Brothers of Destruction that have partner that I could play as commander? And like, they were into it, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, this is cool, right? So, because I just pitched it just to be funny, right? But people really were into it. So then that got me thinking, if you could have any two, or I'll even give you three if you want to go three, cards in Magic of WWE things, what would you want?
I guess you got to have some kind of Undertaker card for Black, because he'd be...
He was the one I said, if they wanted to make a wrestler into a Planeswalker, I'd be down. Like, that's the one.
Because his whole gimmick is that he kind of sort of has magic powers or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be for that. I could get behind that. I think for me, I think what would be fun is, like, using the planes. Like, if you play Plane Chase and you just, like, randomly determine, like, the game rules or whatever, making a set of those that are, like, the WWE events. So you can get one that, like, all right, well, right now it's a ladders match. And then, like, this one's a Hell in a Cell or whatever, comes with special game rules.
Give me one of those where the people that love this are going to love it. The people that hate it.
Oh, they're going to think we're stupid. They're going to think we're absolute idiots.
They're going to want us to run out of town on a rail.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Which will not be the first time somebody has wanted that to happen to me, I'm sure.
Yeah, then what was funny is somebody said, well, people already complained about having real humans on magic cards and whatever. It's like, well, we could throw back and we could do Rockin' Rustlers with Captain Lou Albano and Hulk Hogan or whatever.
Ricky Steamboat, creature type dragon.
Yep, Ricky Steamboat. He could be some type of dragon character.
Human, but it's actually dragon creature type.
I'd be all right with that. Yeah, there's some crazy stuff you could do if we went down that road.
Oh, but... God. Can you imagine all the objects? Macho Man Randy Savage alone, the equipment. You could have the scepter, Macho Crown.
Macho Man's glasses. The Coco Slim Jim. Wears bird. Like Junkyard Dog's chain. Like you can do a lot.
Slim Jim equipment can only be equipped to Randy Macho Man Savage or something.
We can do title belts, but then you get some that actually have like foil engraving that are the numbered ones, you know, whatever. Like you can get those. That'd be cool.
The $1 million belt.
Yeah, dude, there's tons of crazy, silly things we could do. Like, but again, you got to be willing to not take yourself too seriously, right? That's kind of part of wrestling's whole gimmick. I mean, see the awesome truth right now, right? Right. But you got to be able to have fun.
Oh, yeah. R-Truth card where he's like, all right, I play Blue Eyes White Dragon, because R-Truth always completely confused about what's going on around him. And he's aging backwards, by the way.
On that note, we'll wrap it up, because if you don't watch wrestling, you won't even understand that last reference. But Brian, why don't you show everybody where they can find you on social media?
Right. I am Brian Sonic on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram.
And you can find me everywhere, Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And right now, if you're looking for anything around the new set, Thunder Junction, hit up my YouTube channel, because there is a ton of stuff that's already up and more going up every day. But as always, wherever you are watching or listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves. And most importantly, take care of yourselves, your family, be awesome, and be awesome to each other.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.